You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Shouldn't you be at home?
And Love. Oh, and Love, he's got a real chance now. Peter and Love.
John Walk will take the penalty.
Up goes Dion Dublin.
Unknown goal from Ruddock.
Full back break here for Kiwabia.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again. Bruce scores!
Oh, a magnificent goal from Darren Huckabee.
Still Rule Fox. He's gone to the left. Oh.
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hutton.
No.
Hello and welcome back to Quickly Kevin. I'm Chris Gull and welcome to these, now that's what I call Quickly Kevin lockdown specials. Joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And the man who is hoarding shitloads of Pez. It's Michael Marden.
Hello.
Best thing about Pez, little head dispenser things.
Yeah.
The sweet itself, rubbish. Have
we
covered that?
Really poor. Really, yeah, great.
But the heads were the things, the dispensers were so exciting.
I think it's all overrated. I think
really?
Pez were an absolute scam.
Did they ever do football Pez?
Is that still a thing?
What, Pez?
Yeah, yeah. I brought my girlfriend one for Christmas, a Grinch Pez, as a little stocking filler. Lovely. She loves the Grinch, but yeah, waste of time.
Waste of time. So, I've got another question it was week two of our lockdown specials. I've got another question related to lockdown. Now, obviously, the season is going to go on, and they are probably going to finish it, blah, blah, blah. There was a point at which your best mate, Karen Brady, Chris, wanted to just cancel the season. What point in any 90s season would you have wanted the season, would have been the best moment to have the season cancelled?
That's a great question.
That's tough, isn't it?
I think, I'll go first then. I would have the 91-92 season, so the last old First Division before the
Premier
League.
Before Leeds won.
Yeah, basically Manchester United could and probably should have won that season, but
yeah,
our last 10 games maybe, I think we won maybe 3 in 11 because of fixture congestion, so we would have won.
Fixture congestion, still got the excuse. Still got the excuse.
Let it go, it's mate. Pathetic.
Yeah. The only reason I started
the old
this podcast
stuffed
is
suits
you guys.
At the FA.
Graham Kelly's got a lot to answer for.
Suburb Millichip. When he does play on a Tuesday and a Thursday while he ate caviar at the Ivy. Anyway, sorry.
I would have ended the season then. It would have been about March as well, so it would have been about this time. And Manchester United.
Are we saying with this rule you end it and then the result stands?
Well, you set the question, mate. I don't know.
Yeah, well, no. How you can interpret it how you want. You say that then, man, you would claim the title.
Yes,
exactly. Like Liverpool would, were you to end it now.
We would have claimed the title. Yeah.
Chris?
Although we probably wouldn't have signed Eric Cantona if that happened.
So it's the butterfly effect.
I retract my answer in that case.
I would suspend the season about 10 minutes after Alan Shearer scores against Germany in the semi-final. I think we could regroup, maybe get Hoddle in at that point. Come out with a different game plan, just get behind the ball, see it out, 1-0, we'll do the Czech Republic, like six months later.
Yeah.
Easy.
When would I suspend the season? That is a good question. I hadn't got an answer for it because I know when I'd suspend the season.
Is this going to be anti-Manchester United?
Yeah, it's going to be the 89th minute of the Champions League final.
I saw that coming a mile off.
In 1999.
I thought you were going to say
Manu
the semi-final with Arsenal.
Of course, what people forget is the fixture congestion Bayern Munich had at that time, which has really tired them. So write in if you have any views on when you want to end any of the 90s seasons. And it will be added to the correspondence in our electronic postbag.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the electronic postbag.
You've got mail.
Hello, big fan of the show, but wish to talk to you a little bit more about my club, Sheffield Wednesday. Maybe even get Chris Waddle or David Hurst in to have a chat. Anyway, I'm writing to you about something you mentioned in the Tom Davis episode. You were discussing Fulham signing Collins John after John Collins had left, one of our favourite topics. However, they have done something similar since.
Ooh.
Not strictly 90s, but equally strange. When they sold Moussa Dembélé to Spurs, they bought Moussa Dembélé, the ex-Celtic player.
Yes, yeah.
Fulham have done it twice, but this time even more on the nose. Isn't that weird?
It's sort of less fun, I think.
It would have been better if they'd assigned Dembélé Moussa.
Moussa. I missed the palindrome. Like it's...
Also recently, Adama Traore of Wolves has declared to play for Mali, making him the third player in the current Mali squad to be called Adama Traore. Is he the big guy with the shoulders?
He's enormous.
He's amazing.
With his shoulders.
He's got huge shoulders.
He's like square, isn't he?
Would he have been? He wouldn't have been a very 90s player, I don't think. We had that discussion of 90s players now, but I think he's too good. He's too talented for the 90s. Yeah,
we had this question. Like, do you think any team from the 90s would lose against their, like how much better are teams now versus the teams of the 90s? Sometimes I watch Premier League years and I think, is this of a similar standard to what I'm watching now?
Well, that's the thing. You go, I don't know if we've discussed this before because I don't really know anything about tactics, but would like Man U's 4-4-2 be cruelly shown up by a high pressing 4-3-3 situation? Like, were they to play Liverpool or Man City now, would they be absolutely destroyed by being outnumbered in midfield by the overlapping wing? Like, I think
they would.
Or would it be like Rocky, where they're so used to a particular style of play now that the sort of slugging bruiser that would be a 4-4-2 big man? Like, when was the last time a Premiership defence came up against like a big man little man combo? How would they mark Dion Dublin? How would they mark Duncan Ferguson? They would have no idea what they're doing.
Well, I was thinking that. So I think we talked about this not on the show, but my friend sent me that Sven-Göran Eriksson had been on Sky Sports, and it's slightly out of our era, but it's still. And he'd been asked to name his dream team for England. Did you see this?
No.
Sven-Göran Eriksson was on Sky Sports, and they asked him to name the best England team.
Yeah.
So he picked Gerrard and Lampard together in midfield.
Yeah, of course he did.
Of course he did. Put Scholes out on the left.
Changed the record, Sven. Bloody hell.
So he picked that classic, the 2006 team. Neville, Ferdinand, Terry, Cole.
I've got the team here.
But finish with the goalie, because that's...
So right back, Gary Neville, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Ashley Cole, left back, right midfield, David Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes on the left, Owen and Rooney up top. But then in goal, he's picked Joe Hart.
What?
Joe Hart is not his era. And Joe Hart is not a good goalkeeper of any era.
Hold on. So
does this mean he's been picking across all eras?
And you know what? So the frustrating thing about this team is like, this team compounds all the errors that have been made in the last 20 years of English football. Scholes on the left is known to not work. It's Gerrard and Lampard in the heart. It's almost a cliche of a mistake.
I'm confused. Could he pick from any era of England?
Did Joe Hart maybe... Was Joe Hart in Sven's squad as a young goalkeeper in 2006?
Surely not.
But
even if he was...
Did he look at that year at World Cup 2006 team and think, the problem there was we didn't have Joe Hart?
But also Michael Owen and Rooney up front. Like, I feel like that's been proved to not work again and again.
So I know we're not really interested in tactics, but it did get me thinking that if all those players from the golden generation played today, would they not fit into the current ways of playing?
No.
Ashley Cole would, right? Yeah. And your centre-backs would.
Yeah.
Would Gary Neville feel a bit staid, maybe?
I think it would depend. He's not playing as a winger.
They're not the ones I care about.
Okay.
Gerrard and Lampard would be fine in a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
Where are you playing Beckham? In the current system.
I think Beckham would end up as a central midfielder. I don't think he'd be on the right. I think
he'd just be a central midfielder.
Yeah, he'd be a sort of right-sided central midfielder.
And then you just haven't got the wingers in those.
Yes, I mean, yeah, you need to be tackling and kind of driving forward. You need to like Jordan Henderson is a kind of archetype, isn't
but
he
did play role. Beckham did play central midfield in one of the games at a World Cup, and he was really effective because they had Anderson on the right, didn't they? My worry would be, I don't think there's much room for Michael Owen, because most teams play one up front and you can't play. It'd be like,
well, also in those days, seemingly we had no winger. Like, it's all about the two wingers now.
Yeah.
Salah and Mane, or like Leroy Sané and Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
And then what are we doing? Having Walcott and Aaron Lennon? Like,
this team doesn't stand a chance against any high pressing
elite
team.
Do you think
team.
That team would lose against the current England team?
Oh, it's tricky, isn't it? Someone out there must be able to, on a version of Championship Manager with the editor, build that team versus the modern team and just play them against each other.
That midfield would be way better if they played a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
4-4-2. A horrible formation. At least update that, Sven.
Do you think the magazine 4-4-2 has ever thought we need to change it?
What would score change that to? Expected goals?
Expected goals is the biggest load of bullshit. Anyway, sorry, I sound like an old person. I sound like Steve Nicol complaining about throwing coaches.
This is giving me a thought.
I think it's a good idea.
For these lockdown specials, can you send us your most 90s 11?
Yes, please.
Formation of your choosing. Let's not get into managers. Just pick your 4-4-2.
Yeah.
Or a formation of your choosing and your most 90s 11.
Yeah, we'd love that.
With a justification why for each choice
yes.
as well.
Yeah, thank you. This is how you get in touch.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
And now it's time for Now That's What I Call Quickly Kevin Volume 3. First up, it's the wonderful Frank Skinner with a couple of stories from 90s football. Here he is discussing Bobby Gould's time in charge of West Brom in the 90s.
You had Bobby Gould for a while as manager.
We did.
I mean, he seems to be the captain of the ship during the darkest time.
Just a hint of how unpopular Bobby Gould was is when he came back as, I think, a Sky pundit, he was banned from the ground because Albion said they couldn't guarantee his personal safety.
Wow.
One of his first acts, he bought Paul Williams.
Oh, right.
Paul Williams was a lumpen centre forward who had only ever scored for us and who never looked like he might.
Yeah.
I mean, he was perhaps one of our worst ever players. And the story was that he sent, I think it was Stuart Pearson then was the assistant manager, he sent him to sign Paul Williams. And the Paul Williams he was after was a quite a nippy left back.
Oh, he played for Plymouth, that Paul Williams.
Oh, okay.
He was a good player.
Yeah. And so the story goes, Bobby Gould went into the dressing room, looked at Paul Williams and said, "Who the bloody hell are you?" And he said, "Well, you've just signed me." And wow. They got the wrong Paul Williams.
He did that again for Wales. They get the wrong names.
Is that right?
Yeah, he had reform in this area.
Well, it fitted in with a sort of a theme at the Albion. It's Alan Mullery told me. He went up for the manager's job at West Brom at a time when Ronnie Allen was the other candidate. It was an ex-West Brom player. And apparently the chairman said to his assistant, "Go and tell Alan he's got the job." And he thought he meant Ronnie Allen. So he went and told him. And then after they said to Alan Murray, I'll be honest with you, it's supposed to be you, but we don't want to upset him now.
Wow, that's astonishing.
And is it true, I hope this is true, that West Brom fans pass around a coffin with R.O.P. Gould written on it?
In Shrewsbury?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't just take it to the game, they carried it around Shrewsbury.
What, like in a kind of... Like yes. A funeral procession.
Barcelona had the pig's head with Figo, West Brom, it was, full coffin.
It was pretty bleak. Wow. He also brought in the red and yellow striped away kit because he said he'd stumbled across a comic called Roy of the Rovers, which you think he might have heard of as a professional footballer, and saw the red and yellow and thought that it might be a lucky omen.
It
absolutely was not.
So moving on to fantasy football. I think the thing that appealed to me most was how it didn't dumb down the football content. It was you know, it kind of revelled in its nicheness. I don't know who said it to me, but someone said to me that you and David had jokes which you describe as your no-surrender jokes, that you would fight to keep in the show.
Well, we felt that no-surrender was the general policy on the football references, which worried me because no-surrender was very much a Protestant slogan at the time. But that was what we decided to do, that it wasn't supposed to be an explanation. It wasn't a dummy's guide to football. Yeah. And we just thought, well, there's plenty of football fans, so it'll be apparent that there's a door policy, but we're not going to have a sign, you know. It'll just become apparent when you don't get off the things we're saying that it's not for you. And then I met lots of people who said to me, I don't really interest in football, but I really like your show. I don't always know what you're talking about. And that, I didn't see that coming.
Were there any kind of jokes where even you and David were like, I think that's too niche?
The only joke I remember us having a big debate about was we wanted to do an audience vote. We'd just been knocked out of the World Cup. And we wanted to have a vote. If you had the choice, which would you rather have? England back in the World Cup or Princess Diana alive again? And I think the producer was edgy about it. But I remember defending that by saying, but we're not saying anything. It's a question.
Yeah.
And if you're right that it is outrageous, then obviously, you know, Princess Diana will win hands down. So that's all well and good.
What do you think the result would have been?
Oh, I know what I would have voted.
Queen of Hearts, mate.
Yeah. It's a bit embarrassing because Sol Campbell was celebrating the fact that she'd come back to life and then she hadn't.
And now here's 90s icon Ian Dowie discussing dressing room DJs and dropping a dance-based bombshell.
So we've had Matt Letizia on earlier in this series, and obviously you played at Southampton.
I did.
He mentioned that Glenn Cockerill was the DJ in the change rooms. Do you remember that?
If you know Glenn, if you want a parody of Rod Stewart, it is Glenn. That's what he does. He's still now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely the same. That same dyed hair. To be fair, he's in great nick for a lad of his age now. Incredible. But he's the ex-Saint sort of leader down there, but I don't remember him ever being a DJ other than that he liked to sing Rod Stewart songs. So where would he sing them?
On the bus or on the...
No, well, he'd sing them to himself, you know, because he...
Bit of Maggie
May. He thought he was Glenn, Rod Stewart. We had some powerful people in. In fact, as I remember, Tim Flowers was the DJ in there. Because he used to have UB40. So he always had a bit of rat in my kitchen. What am I going to do?
Don't want that as you're going out.
Yeah. We used to have that all the time. Not rat going out, but in the
squirrel in the attic. That's the problem with you.
Pre-game, we had a bit of UB40, a bit of reggae. Bob Marley is a big reggae fan, Tim Flowers.
Wow. What are you like on the music? Did you ever get in the change room and go, right, let's listen to this?
I was, as you may aware, I was more of a dancer than a listener to music.
Wow. Okay.
What, you don't believe that?
I'm trying to imagine what you see that she does.
You know what you see incredulity across someone's face. I understand that. We used to go when we were younger to a place called Royalty in Southgate, and me and my brother and a couple of boys used to do a little routine.
Rehearsed routine?
Anyone would tell you I've been any club I've been at, I would be first on the dance floor. That's the way it was.
Oh, wow. And what kind of styles? Tap, modern?
No, it's just purely disco.
Disco?
Yeah, it's purely jazz funk is my big favourite. Why is that?
This
why
is if he's gone off.
I just think, I love that.
You're an old-fashioned centre forward.
Do you know what?
Have you ever come across Dion Dublin? You know, he's quite a musician.
He's very doob. He's got the doob, isn't he?
The doob, yeah. Is brilliant. That kind of thing you're in?
Yeah, I like that. I don't play any musical instruments. I mean, I don't understand it at all.
But you just feel the rhythm.
Yeah, I think there is some rhythm in there, where that's come about. You wouldn't judge me watching it at West Ham. But,
And finally, here's Darren Anderson with an amazing story of what might have been, had it happened, the greatest moment in English football history.
Seeing as you mentioned it, we should move on to Euro 96.
Well, I mean, so this one is... of the tournament, probably the tournament of our lives, Darren.
Yeah.
You're there in the heart of it. You're having a swig of beer just before you ask.
Yeah, dentist chair.
Well, I mean, before we talk about the football, we should talk about that. The weekender in Hong Kong, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, it was a pre-tournament. Fell out in the season tour, but it was we not sure why we did go out to Hong Kong and China.
Were you playing a game?
We played a game in China.
Yeah,
great warm up for the Euro 96.
Yeah, so we season finished, game against Hungary, Wembley, then off to China, game there, then Hong Kong where we played against almost like a select 11. Wasn't much of a game really.
So it wasn't even the main Hong Kong team.
No. it was.
What was the score?
We only won 1-0. I mean, we didn't get caps or anything for it.
Really? He struck off the record.
Yeah.
Just even...
yeah. So, real waste of time. but we were going home the next day. But that, you know, after that, there was a bit of function and a dinner with sponsors and all that, and that was dragging on a bit. And you know, Terry said the boys could have a night out. So
who said that? Terry said.
Yeah, yeah. Tony Adams go up. Yeah, boys were like gagging for a night out, and so Terry just going, the famous last words, you know, behave yourselves. But yeah, we had Brian Robson with us to look after us.
Oh, I mean, that's the worst chaperone you can imagine, isn't it?
And it was, and the following day was Gaz's birthday. So
it really was a perfect storm.
Once it got to in and around that midnight, and he was getting the flaming sambucas out and all sorts. And
who was the leader? Oh, who was leading?
Well, Gazza would be involved.
Gazza,
I mean, there was a few, boys on that trip. So it was. And then who found it or who saw it? This dentist chair, and off the boys went. You know,
Do you remember taking the photos?
No. I mean, I've been over to Hong Kong quite a lot since over the years on different tours and things like that, and met the guys who kind of ran that bar, and they say, you know, the people who did it, you know, they were fired straight away. It was just people who were working there. Yeah, it was naughty. But
was there a buzz around where people like the England team are in the bar getting absolutely smashed?
Probably, yeah. We were, I mean, the pictures with the ripped shirts and everything. It was, proper boys' night out.
How did the ripped shirts happen?
Gazza just started ripping people's shirts.
See you.
But it was obviously a mad night. It was great fun. I remember the following morning waking up thinking, oh my lord, I've missed training here. It was, you know, 10:30 or something. You know, I don't know why I training's cancelled.
Oh really?
Training's cancelled. Yeah,
by Gazza.
So it was cancelled. So we all we'd go to the shops and all that, and flew home about midnight that night. By the time we got back, it was everywhere. By the time we had, finished long flight, I'm like, oh dear. And then of course they said we smashed up the plane, which was completely untrue. But not a good start. And then we have a stinker in the first game.
Not a good start.
We were useless against Switzerland, and the press just come for us. Absolutely bad. But it worked out great.
How much, because it was obviously a home tournament, there's been what, 6 years of build up or whatever to us, knowing we've got this tournament. How much pressure did it feel like? A really big, this is it, this is the biggest tournament.
Yeah, because I think we hadn't played a competitive game for 2 years as well. And that was friendlies upon friendlies, and then all of a sudden, wow, this really matters. Game you're supposed to win comfortably. Al scores his goal, first goal he'd scored in probably about 12 games, and there was a lot of pressure on him, and then all of a sudden come out and start the second half, and everything just went a bit sloppy, a couple of misplaced passes, the crowd got a bit edgy, then the players got a bit edgy, and I played poorly. I was one of about six or seven who just didn't play. It was a disaster. It was like, oh my god, that's awful. And then the pressure, and then the stick, and the
pain. And then you've got a week to go back to that training camp. Are you, because you're obviously based in the UK, but you don't get to go home?
Well, we did then. We were able to go home on the Saturday night, back for Sunday. And then I think a few of the boys were out, so that was back in the papers. After the Scotland game, we were supposed to do the same. You can go home, come back Sunday night. So of course that got been to, and I can't let you out of here, can I?
Were you allowed to drink in the training camp?
No, not really. No. The boys, good.
So what did you do with the time in the evenings?
Not too much. I mean, there was lots of other games on, so the boys would be watching the other games and that sort of thing. And that's the worst part of tournament football.
It
gets really boring.
So England, Scotland, you win 2-0.
Yeah.
Does the atmosphere just turn in the dressing room?
I think it just turned everywhere. I mean, I wouldn't say we played overly well on the day, but we came out second half, scored the good goal, and the whole tournament just changed in that 1 minute with, you know, the penalty McAllister misses, got the other end, and Gazza scores the wonder goal from my wonderful pass.
Oh,
course.
Yeah, assist. You know, so, oh. People don't talk about that assist enough.
He had a tap in. But you just felt that was it. The celebration, everything about it. And I remember even that when the final whistle went, the crowd stayed, the song came on.
Three Lions, yeah.
And that was it. It was just.
So, because we've interviewed Frank Skinner recently about that. And he talked about, were you there on the training ground the day they came down to play the song?
No, I wasn't there, no, because I missed that game, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Would you have done it? Because he said they struggled to get England players to be in the video.
I bet, yeah. No, I can't imagine me stepping forward, really. But no, so, I mean, still gives me goosebumps when it comes on. I mean, just even for, you know, the following games, ending up staying out there for a little bit longer in the warm-up because the song's come on, the crowd are singing it. It's, memories that are just... You stay with you forever.
I'm getting goosebumps now. I wasn't even playing.
Did you play it in the dressing room before? Would you play it?
Played it on the bus last song before getting there, yeah. Everyone seems to know the score. They've seen it all before. They just know. They're so sure that England's gonna throw it away. Gonna blow it. When you play for England, there's a lot of pressure. You know you better play well, as you're getting slaughtered by the press, by whoever, and you want to do so well. And it's not often you're playing at Wembley, 4-0 up, half hour to go against Holland. The whole stadium singing football, you know, songs, and you're kind of humming along and just enjoying, taking it all in. It don't get any better than that.
So, sadly, let's bring it down to the semi-final.
Yes, beautiful.
Obviously, a lot of people go on about Gazza almost getting the winner in extra time. They forget that you hit the post.
I know, nightmare. Yeah, disaster. It was a weird one. This is what Macca got in and he pulled it back and it was just a little bit behind me. I got the touch on it, but I think I was falling away. So I'd got a connection on it, thinking, oh, well, it's in. And kind of by the time I've hit it, I'm facing the other way and I kind of roll over and watch the ball just... Not only does it hit the post, it then goes back into the keeper's hand, who's already dived past it. So it was just like, oh my, surely not. It would have been amazing because we had a little celebration to actually just run off down the tunnel.
But you were all going to run off down the tunnel?
It would have been the first golden goal. It would have been brilliant.
your plan was, if you got the winner,
that was the shout,
you
the
were
boys
all
going to
run down the tunnel.
But it was the other end, so it might have been a long run.
That would have been the greatest moment in football history.
More great stuff. More great content. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Loved it.
Favourite bit? The middle. Because you're equally much in it and you know there's still a bit to come.
Yeah.
So, number for our Des Lynam poem that we end all of our lockdown specials on?
My favourite number is number 9, so let's go for that.
Big number 9, Duncan Ferguson, an ode to by... on A Portrait of a Deaf Man by Sir John Betjeman.
That's it from this episode of Now That's What I Call Quickly, Kevin. We'll be back very soon with some more 90s football-based content. Until then, Robbie Slater, see you later.
The kind old face, the egg-shaped head, the tie discreetly loud, the loosely fitting shooting clothes, a closely fitting shroud. He liked old city dining rooms, potatoes in their skin, but now his mouth is wide to let the London clay come in. He took me on long silent walks in country lanes when young, He knew the name of every bird, but not the song it sung. And when he could not hear me speak, he smiled and looked so wise that now I do not like to think of maggots in his eyes. He liked the rain-washed Cornish air and smell of ploughed-up soil. He liked a landscape big and bare and painted it in oil. But least of all, he liked that place which hangs on Highgate Hill, of soaked Carrara-covered earth for Londoners to fill. He would have liked to say goodbye, shake hands with many friends. In Highgate now, his finger bones stick through his finger ends. You, God, who treat him thus and thus, say, save his soul and pray. You ask me to believe you, and I only see decay.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.